Levy versus Minnesota Life. Mr. Stamos?
Please the court. Counsel, I'm James J. Stamos. I represent Dr. Levy. We ask the court to reverse summary judgment entered on behalf in favor of Minnesota Life, enter summary judgment in favor of Dr. Levy, and in the alternative, remand the case for a trial if the court concludes the facts are in fact disputed. I'd like to first address the facts. There seemed to be some misapprehension of the record, I think. Dr. Prodromos, the expert retained by Dr. Levy, clearly testified, and I refer the court to Minnesota Life Supplemental Appendix at 2930 and at 36 and 37. He opined that the basketball injury caused the meniscal tear, which is the injury to the knee, and that meniscal tear developed into the arthritis, which resulted in his in the disability, which it is admitted that he has. He's basically unable to walk on that leg. So those facts are present. If the court concludes that summary judgment should not be entered for Dr. Levy, there certainly is a question of fact that we present to support our position. With regard to the basis for summary judgment entered against Dr. Levy, the court respectfully, the trial court, used the wrong analysis and reached the wrong conclusion, the wrong standard.
What do you make of the fact that when the policy lapsed,
yes,
there was a couple of years of non-payment of premium?
I think there are a couple of instances in which premiums weren't paid and then it was renewed.
But to reinstitute the insurance, as I understand it, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought to get the insurance back in force, he had to sign a declaration, and he did, indicating that he had no injuries.
I believe what it says, Judge, and it, is that he has not suffered a disability or been injured or sick since the end of the policy's grace period. In other words, to reinstate it, he had to say during that interim, when the premium had not been paid, I haven't been injured. And I think the exact language I'm quoting is, has not suffered a disability or been injured or sick during that period. And that would have been in 1993 and again in 1994. So there is not, he certainly isn't giving the opinion that I don't currently have a condition which is degenerating into a disability caused by the injury I suffered in 87. So I don't think those would rise to something like a judicial admission in this instance. I think that's simply, during that period, I've not been disabled and I haven't had an injury. I think that's how that would apply. I think with regard to the standard, the causation standard here, the magistrate judge clearly identified the fact that the phrase due to an injury or a sickness due to, I'm sorry, a disability due to an injury or a sickness, the phrase due to is not defined. He observed that there are four alternate possible applications for that. Three of them he cited to Black's Law Dictionary for but-for causation, immediate cause, and sole cause, and one of them is the IPI. There is no case cited by the court below or by my opponent that supports the application of the immediate cause standard.
That's normally, though, what one thinks of as an injury. Somebody fell off a ladder, they were in an auto accident, there was some identifiable event. It just seems like it's pretty remote here in 87.
Well,
injury playing basketball to your knee, and that qualifies as an injury under the policy.
Well, I think the experience in life suggests maybe that's not so odd. I mean, I bet there are an awful lot of people in the NFL. I can remember standing next to Mike Ditka one time when he was on crutches because of injuries he'd suffered many years before, and now he's disabled. And I think it would be hard to argue that all those hits he took on the football field 10 or 15 years earlier weren't injuries that resulted in his disability. There might have even been litigation about that.
That was Mike Ditka was a tight end who took a lot of hits a lot of years. This is one, you know, playing a pickup basketball game 20 years ago, you injured your knee.
I would submit we've presented expert testimony to support the proposition that, in fact, that's what caused it. There certainly, if one assumes that the expert retained by Minnesota Life did give competent evidence to controvert that, there would be a controverted fact as to whether it was or not. And in that instance, a trier of fact would have to determine that. But certainly we've presented a competent expert to testify that that, in fact, is what led to the disability. But in this case, the standard that the court chose is the immediate cause standard, and there is no case that supports that, and no case cited. The only two cases discussed in any of the materials before the court, the Carlson case and the Faulkner case, both apply the proximate cause standard. And with Faulkner, with citation to the IPI. In fact, if this were a lawsuit about the accident, say he was run into by someone in the basketball game and sued him, and there were no statute problem, there's no doubt but that the IPI would apply. And the IPI provides that it need not be the most recent cause, need not be the only cause. It's simply a proximate cause. And both Faulkner
worked 10 years
well,
after this 87.
I think that gets to be a question of fact, Your Honor. On that point, it might be unusual. It might not be unusual. I submit as a question of fact for which we presented competent opinion testimony to support it. It's undisputed that he had the basketball injury, that 2 years later he had a surgery from it, and Dr. Podromos gives the opinion that developed into the arthritis that crippled him. And I think that we've presented evidence to support that, and if in fact Dr. Waldrum has competent testimony to controvert that, then I would submit that there is a disputed issue of fact. But I see I'm cutting into my rebuttal time. I just want to observe that the only cases that relate to this and that are before the court are Carlson and Faulkner. Carlson assumes proximate cause applies. Faulkner expressly adopts proximate cause, and in both of those cases, the language that was being applied was the injury was, quote, directly and independently of all other causes. In other words, that's a sharp pencil point. That's a very restrictive reference to what the causation can be, and proximate cause was used there. Here we have much broader language, the words due to. There is no basis or reason to apply a stricter standard. And I will leave it at that and come back and rebuttal. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Stenberg. Mr. Montselector.
Good morning. My name is Warren von Schleicher, and I represent Minnesota Life. It's undisputed in this case that Dr. Levy's disabling condition is a disease. It's the disease of arthritis. And under the terms of the policy, when an insured is disabled due to a disease, benefits are capped at age 65. And Minnesota Life paid benefits to age 65 under the sickness provision of the policy, which includes disease. Nothing in this policy requires that once it's determined that the disabling condition is a disease, one must engage in a secondary analysis and determine if the disabling disease was due to another disease or due to some injury. Yet that's what Dr. Levy and his counsel propose. The proximate cause standard that's advocated by Dr. Levy, in fact, leads to illogical results. And I point in the brief, and the district court also referenced in its opinion, the hypothetical of the car accident. And in that situation, if an insured is disabled due to traumatic injuries sustained in an automobile accident, the clear meaning of these policies is that he would be entitled to benefits for the lifetime because he was disabled by traumatic injuries. But if that car accident had resulted because the insured had a seizure due to a diabetic issue while driving, a proximate cause issue would subject that to being reclassified as a disease because the proximate cause of the accident was a disease, and that would be illogical. It would not be what the insured and insurer alike would expect when someone is disabled by traumatic injuries.
Well, the thing the district court had to focus on was to interpret the contract and try to understand what this due-to language meant, right?
That's
the
correct.
The court went through four possible definitions that it could be. So how could that phrase not be ambiguous?
Well,
in light of that, how could it not be ambiguous? And then when you know the Illinois rule, if it's ambiguous, it's construed against the insurance company.
In order to
I mean,
be ambiguous.
If there are all these four choices you could make on that due-to language, isn't that on its face?
It would only be ambiguous if, when applied, those various definitions make sense. And the whole thrust of the court's opinion in our brief is that the other standards of causation don't make sense. And in particular, the proximate cause standard doesn't make sense. Counsel cited the Faulkner case. And it's important to note that the Faulkner court determined that a proximate cause standard was appropriate Because the policy in that case specifically said, and it was an AD&D policy, that accidental death or dismemberment must be caused by an injury directly and independently of all other causes. That creates a high standard. In fact, that creates an impossible standard. And the court determined in Faulkner that as a matter of public policy, it would adopt a proximate cause approach because it would be essentially impossible to say that an injury that accidental death and dismemberment resulted from an injury directly and independently of all other causes. So the Faulkner court adopted the proximate cause approach as a public policy matter. But this policy isn't ambiguous because a proximate cause approach is theoretically something that Dr. Levy proposes, because in practical reality it doesn't make sense and it defeats coverage. And I pointed to another example. Suppose.
But your view is that the ordinary and popular meaning of the words due to is immediately caused by. Isn't that your view?
That's correct.
So hypothetically, what if you had a student that failed an exam? Teacher says, you know, what happens? Student says, it was because my mother died a month ago and I also caught a cold yesterday. Under your interpretation, the average person would mean that only the student's cold caused the poor examination performance.
Well, when we bring the temporal period very close together, it becomes more difficult to determine what is the immediate cause. But suppose that student's mother failed to wake him up for class 10 years ago. And as a result, a sequence of events occurred so that the loss...
Yeah, but my hypothetical was within a month period.
As the temporal period becomes more close, it is more difficult to determine what the immediate cause is. But I submit that that hypothetical can still be addressed under an immediate cause standard.
And it would be the cold. You would be the cold then.
Well,
I mean, the death wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Excuse me?
The death of the parent wouldn't have anything to do with it under your...
I think that when you bring the temporal time period, it becomes more difficult to determine what is the immediate cause.
Yeah, but you don't have any authority, no Illinois decisions using this immediate cause definition that you posit, right?
That's correct, and there is also no authority on this type of policy to apply a proximate cause approach. And in fact, as we've pointed out, and as the district court held, that proximate cause approach would defeat the expectation of insureds in so many cases. It's important to construe policies in a common sense manner. And when somebody becomes disabled because they have a disabling disease, it's obvious that that insured would be covered under the sickness coverage.
And if we assume that the district court erred in interpreting the contract, let's just assume that for a moment. We have contrasting testimony between Padromas and Waldrum, right?
Well,
so
I think
why isn't there a material fact here?
There's actually two key points, and that is really addressing the proximate cause theory. But first of all, regarding the lapse issue, Dr. Levy not only said he hadn't been injured or sick, but he also said he had a full recovery from the 1989 meniscal tear, and he said no symptoms since. So that's an important fact and an admission, in fact, by Dr. Levy. Second, Dr. Padromos testified, although he submitted the conclusion of causation, he also testified that the meniscal tear was the indirect cause of the arthritis, and that's key admission on the part of Levy and Dr. Padromos. And furthermore, Dr. Padromos also testified that when he saw Dr. Levy for the first time in 1996, Dr. Levy told him that the cause of my problems. And in fact, Dr. Padromos said that Dr. Levy went out of his way to emphasize that the cause of his problems was the 1987 basketball injury. And that's the basis of Dr. Padromos' testimony.
Well, but Padromos said repeatedly, he said it was his opinion that the cause of the meniscus tear was the basketball injury, and he kept tying things back to the basketball injury.
Well, he kept tying things back to the 1989 meniscal tear,
right,
which he said
was the result of the basketball injury.
Which was Dr. Perdomo said, the cause of the arthritis indirectly. So under both a proximate cause standard, which we think is really a slippery slope for the court to go down, but even under that standard, there's no issue of fact. But fundamentally, I think it would be a mistake to encourage a proximate cause approach, because litigants will constantly be chasing the elusive cause behind the cause. The litigation won't involve whether somebody is disabled due to their disease or due to injuries in an accident. Instead, we'll be moving back in time, in this case decades, in order to find out whether some injury was sustained for which there's no documented evidence and for which the plaintiff is the only purported witness. So I think it's a mistake to invite the kind of litigation that a proximate cause theory would approach.
Of course, if the contract was written in a clear manner, you wouldn't have this issue before us, would we?
Well, I think it actually is written in quite a clear manner, because when people are disabled from an accident and traumatic injuries, they think that they're unable to perform the material duties of their occupation due to those injuries. And if they're disabled, if their disabling medical condition is a disease, I think it's obvious that they're unable to perform the material duties of their occupation due to disease. Dr. Levy wasn't unable to perform his material occupational duties due to the old 1987 pickup sports game. He was unable to perform the material duties of his occupation in 1996 due to the disease of arthritis, which every physician who has testified in this case, including Dr. Perdomos, acknowledge is a disease. So we think that the ruling of the district court is appropriate, the policy is not ambiguous, and that the proper resolution is to affirm the grant of summary judgment on behalf of the defendant. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ranselector. Mr. Stamos?
With regard to Dr. Perdomos' testimony, I would once again refer you to pages 29 and 30 of the supplemental appendix and 36 and 37. With regard to this automobile accident example that they've given, I'm not sure why a better example seems to me to be the one that we've offered, which is you have an automobile accident, your leg is crushed. It then heals, except that, as almost always happens after a joint injury, arthritis begins to develop, and you can't walk as a result. You can't walk because a doctor can say, well, you've got arthritis, but no common sense approach to that situation would suggest that.
Can you not walk immediately, or can you not walk 10 years later?
Well, you know, we have opinion to deal with that. And while I understand sort of the longer away it is, the more common sense says, well, I wonder if it is. But that's a question of fact to be determined by a jury. And I submit that it is not that unusual. And I can give you examples outside the record of people who are hurt a long time ago and because of that injury now can't walk, but in the meantime haven't sought treatment or anything else. And I would just submit that the idea, the only way the analysis below makes sense is if one assumes the court is going to refuse to see an ambiguity and if one assumes that it can't be due to both. And there's nothing in that contract that prevents the disability from being due to both an injury and a sickness, as would be the case when someone has the car accident and the immediate reason they can't walk is because of arthritis, but everyone's going to agree that the arthritis is there because of the car accident. And so I submit that there's an ambiguity. I submit that there's a dispute of fact at the very least. And I believe that Dr. Waldrum's opinion should not be given should not be considered competent because he has no facts to back them up. He simply says, I don't think it happened during a basketball accident. I think it happened some other time, but he cannot point to another time. He says it's the usual bumps and bruises of life. Well, there are no facts to support that. We ask that summary judgment be entered in our favor, or at the very least, that it be remanded for a trial. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.